Hi, I'm Jane Lowy, and I'm recently turned 50 years old, and today is May 30th, 2007. We're in Orleans, Massachusetts, and I'm here to interview today my dear friend, Dolores. We're pals, girlfriends.
Hello, my name is Dolores DeLuz, and I am 73. Sunday is my birthday. And as Jane said, we're located here in High Orleans, Mass. And Jane is my good friend, and today is May 30th, 2007.
Great. Well, thank you for agreeing to come to this with me today, Dolores, because you're one of the treasures of my life. And my love for you knows no bounds, and I wish that other people could just have a taste of who you are, and that's the main reason I invited you here today. And so much of your life inspires me, and perhaps it will inspire someone else. So thanks for coming.
Well, Jane, it's been my privilege to meet you and know you, and you're always getting me into trouble.
Good. I hope we can do that today.
And you just take me places that I don't think I can go, and yet I go, and I'm always happy to be there. And I'm happy to be here with you today. You are the light of my life, and you are a great inspiration to me, and I love you.
Thanks. So with this love fest started, I want to ask you a couple of questions. And the first one is really about Queen Street. I know you grew up in Delaware, in Dover, Delaware, in a segregated neighborhood, and the main street, as you told me, is called Queen Street. So I want to hear more about Queen Street because it seemed to have produced a queen. So I want to know what it was like there.
Well, Queen Street was the main street where we lived. Of course, Lockerman Street was the main street in town. But right off Lockerman Street was Queen Street. And it was a very important street for me because a lot of our professional and professional people lived there. We had doctors, and I don't think we had a lawyer on Queen Street. This is back in the 40s. We had a dentist, Dr. Charles Henry. And then we had his brother, who was a doctor, Dr. William Henry. They both lived on the same street. And Dr. William Henry, William Henry's wife was named Cece. Now, she was very, very flamboyant. I don't know where she came from, but I think she must have been Creole, maybe from Louisiana or somewhere, because she just brought in a whole new style that nobody on Queen Street had ever seen before. Everybody talked about Cece Henry. She was beautiful, and she was friendly, and she was warm and outgoing, and she was the talk of the town. And, of course, Dr. Charles Henry's wife was named Beatrice, and she was just the opposite of Cece. She was very sedate, quiet, tailored, you know, with suits and stuff, where Cece wore, you know, dresses down to her navel almost. But it was quite a contrast between the two ladies. Uh-huh. But moving on down the street, it was...
Well, can I just ask you one thing? Were you more like Cece, or what was the other lady's name?
Beatrice.
Beatrice, yes. Were you more like Cece or Beatrice?
But of course, Cece.
Oh, of course.
Yes, I admire Cece because I loved people who were different, who were expressing themselves and without caring a lot what other people said. I liked that idea. And so, I would say that I was more Cece. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And right on down, moving on down Queen Street, we had only two black barbershops in town. And one of them was Mr. Jim Nichols, and the other one was Mr. Joe Shockley. He had a barbershop. And one was on Queen Street, and the other one was just around the corner, just a wee bit. And then Mr. Percy Blackburn and his wife, Carrie, lived on Queen Street. And he was a magician. Yes. Huh. And his wife was a poet. And he would do little shows at the school and at church functions. And I don't know what else he did for work, but that's what I remember, that he was a magician. And he was fun. He was a little short man and very funny even to look at, but he was quite a magician. And then we had Hubbard's Grocery Store, a big store right on the corner. And we seldom went downtown to get anything because we grew everything right in our neighborhoods. Everybody had gardens. They had chickens. And on Fridays, the fish man would come from one end of Queen Street right to the end and go up down Kirkwood Street where all the black folks lived. He would come and bring fish. And so we never had a chance to go down Lockerman Street too much. I mean, only to maybe buy clothes, which was seldom because a lot of people took the feed bags from the grain store. The grains used to come in these beautiful bags, fabric, stripes and plaids and flowers. And people would really go right down and get them and make clothes out of them.
Well, you know what's so amazing to me about this is that my friend Vita from Ghana does the same thing. And she makes a lot of the inside of their clothes, like there'd be two sides and the inside of it would be made from grain bags and flour sacks and things. Yeah. So the African-American thing, I mean, it's African. I mean, it's also thrifty and everything else to do that and everything, like, but that there is a relationship, you know, that's amazing to me.
Well, it's amazing how when people are, I wouldn't say poverty stricken, but when they don't have a lot, can make do with, so, I mean, they get creative and do things that you wouldn't ordinarily think about doing, you know?
Yeah.
So it was great fun to have my grandmother make me a flour sack dress. Yeah. And so, like I said, Hubbard's was the big store there where we'd go get candy and sugar and flour in small amounts. And if we wanted big stuff, we would go downtown. But and then there was Grayson John Parker on the corner. And he was a principal and she was a dietitian at the high school, which was the black school. We didn't... It was segregated, of course, and we had our own principal, the whole works. And
in the same building or two different buildings?
No, we went from the first grade to the 10th grade. And after that, we had to go to Delaware State College for our last 2 years of high school because we didn't have a high school. But the year that I graduated from Delaware State High School, they built a new high school, after the doctor, Wilm Henry, that I was telling you about in the beginning. They built the first comprehensive black high school in Kent County in 1952. And so I never got a chance to go there. But when we graduated from Delaware State High School and the teachers from the college, we'd had like three buildings on the campus where the high school students were. And the teachers from the college would come down and give us some English and some math and so forth and so on. And we all graduated. We learned how to read and write beautifully. Everybody, when I look at the kids today, they don't do so well with the reading and writing and have fancy buildings and, you know, PhD teachers and... And yet they didn't get what we got as students, I don't feel.
Hmm.
Yeah. So.
Wasn't there, was it Sunday nights that there was the lady that made the chicken and opened up like a her own little window when she cooked things and people came there for takeout or something?
Oh, yeah. Well, going back down on Queen Street now, we have the Seventh-day Adventist, and then we have Hazel and Ducky Massey, and he was a chef at Delaware State College where my husband graduated from. He was the big chef there. Everybody knew Ducky Massey. And then the Wright family, now this is, they lived right on the corner, and she sold dinners. They had a long house on the side, and they had windows, And it was like a restaurant in there. Of course, we couldn't go downtown. There was no place that we could eat downtown. So we had, because it was all segregated. And so people used to have cooked dinners in their homes. And she had like a little restaurant with tables and chairs and everything in it. And she sold dinners there. That was the closest we got to a real sit-down restaurant.
Uh-huh.
And across the street was Mr. Vaughn and his wife. Now, Mr. Vaughn was really strange. He didn't fit in. He didn't look black. We never knew what he was. But he was he was black in our black community. But we knew that his wife, Rosie, was black. But we couldn't figure out what he was. We thought maybe he might be Indian, not Native American, but from India. But he spoke a different language, and we never knew what it was. He never said, I don't know that he ever said who he was. And I think it didn't really matter. You know, he was just part of the community. But we do know that he had a little penny candy store. And you go in and get your Mary Janes and your gumballs and your coconut strips. And, you know.
Yeah.
And he played the piano. And he would sing in this foreign language, whatever it was. We still couldn't figure out what it was. Or maybe it was just gobbledygook. Who knew? And then Miss Swigert lived next door to them, and she had a beautiful porch. I say her house was almost one of the most beautiful houses on Queen Street. Her porches were very important back then. We had it was a socializing, where people met mm-hmm. after work. They would go sit on each other's porches and talk and have iced tea and lemonade and maybe some hard drink, you know. But a lot of chit chat and laughing and music and across the streets all the way down, yeah. You know, having fun and sitting out. And she worked at the Dinner Bell in downtown, which was very, very exclusive. We used to walk by this kids.
But you couldn't go in.
No, couldn't go in.
No.
And only the people that worked there went through the back door.
So all your worlds were so completely separate for the most part.
Yeah.
And didn't you tell me that your mother, who really liked the finer things in life, would organize like dinner parties mm-hmm. and where people would get dressed up in gowns and everything and have dances and that kind of thing?
Yeah. She, my mother was kind of ahead of her time, I think. She used to work for a Jewish lady named Mrs. Brown. And Mrs. Brown would have dinner parties. And, of course, my mother would go serve. And so I think she just picked up on all that, you know, decided, oh, this is fun and I can do this. So she would tell her girlfriends. She had a little posse of friends who always were to the house and who we called aunts and cousins. And there were no relations, but we just saw them all the time. They were like part of the family. And so she would have them dress up, you know, put on your gown, long gown. And we're going to have dinner at my mother's house. And we had, of course, a dining room when we moved to our new place. We had a dining room.
Oh.
We never had a dining room. We came from, like, three rooms with outside toilets and water outside and no running water in the house. Of course, no bathrooms, outside toilets.
Yeah, you had a triple header, I hear.
And then we moved, yeah. A two-seater and then two and two one-single seats, yeah. That and it served like six families in the little block that we lived. But our house, like, set up on cinder blocks. And when it was hot, we would go under the house and play. It was full of sand there. And, of course, all the dogs and cats would go there, too. And we'd go in itching and scratching because the dogs had fleas.
Oh.
Oh, and my mother would get so annoyed with us, you know. We'd have to stand in the tub and be sponged down and had water poured over us every night. We couldn't get a bath every night. It was just too much work to heat water on a two-burner kerosene stove.
No.
So
it's not going to do it.
When we moved, I kind of got away from my part. When we moved to our new place across the tracks, well, we just thought we had died and gone to heaven. We just ran through the house screaming and yelling, "Oh, is this our house for sure, Daddy?" He said, "Yep, it's your house." It had beautiful hardwood floors. It had a front and back porch. Yeah, it had a nice big kitchen with windows. It had running water, hot and cold.
And a bath.
And upstairs it had a bathtub.
Hot dang.
Yeah, with a with a flush toilet. Oh, my God. We died and thought we'd gone to heaven. And it was just a beautiful house. And my mother fixed it up so beautifully. And this is where she'd have her dinner parties. She'd tell her girlfriends to come over. We're going to have dinner tonight. Wear your gowns. And the men would dress up in tuxedos, just like they were going downtown to dinner. And she would have a couple ladies at the church come and serve them. She'd do the cooking. But she'd go upstairs and dress up and come down like Miss Astor, you know, down the steps. And it was a fun time. Yeah, it was a fun time. My mother was quite a lady.
Well, you know, maybe this is the giant segue, but I'd like to. It does bring me to Paul Laurence Dunbar, because this generations of making the party, you know, like your mother making the party in her home and kind of making a world, you know, you make your own world there. Yeah. And so I remember meeting you. It was to do something at church, right?
At your church, yeah. Yes. Uh-huh.
And it was a dramatic reading.
Well, no, not that time. He wanted me to speak in a Reverend Jim.
Yeah.
And he says, "Well, I know you have something to say." And I'm saying, "I don't speak at church. I don't know what to say." He said, "I'll tell you, Dolores, you just take your time and you'll think of something." And it just upset me so much, because I didn't want to say no to him. Well, I did say no, but he convinced me that I could do it. And I'm thinking, what am I going to talk about? I don't know what to talk about. But I did. I did a talk. I talked about my dad. In fact, it was during Martin Luther King celebration, okay. The first time I talked there. And we talked about heroes, and I talked how my dad was my hero.
Okay. And, all right. Well, maybe it was right after.
That was the first time I met you.
Okay. But shortly after, I think we went, maybe it was Black History Month at the Senior Center in Barnstable, and you did.
Yeah.
The party.
Yeah. Yes.
And I was smitten with the beauty of the experience and your ability to capture it. And so I wonder if you do some little piece of that for us now. Because it says.
Okay. This is really taking me off guard. But I can do it. Well, Paul Laurence Dunbar is my favorite poet. Most of his stories were about slavery, because his parents were slaves, and his grandparents, his mother was free, and his father was too, but they told him of the slave experience, and he just took off on it, and he is known for that type of poetry, although he wrote books and he did papers and magazines for Time magazine, and he was very popular during that era, during 1892 or something like that, when he was born, and a little bit more after that. And so I was asked during Negro History Week once at the college to do a poem, and I found this poem by him, and I read it the first time and everybody loved it, and I thought, wow, this is good, I'll learn it. So I did. I learned it. And it goes like this. "They had a great big party down at Tom's the other night. Was I there? You bet. You never in your life seen such a sight. All the folks from four plantations was invited. And they come. They come trooping thick as children when they hears a fife and drum. Everybody dressed their finest. Hush your mouth and get away. Why, I ain't seen such fancy dressing since last quarterly meeting day. Girls all dressed in silks and satin, nary wrinkle, nary crease, eyes a batting, teeth a shining, and hair brushed back as slick as grease, and skirts all tucked and puffed and ruffled, every breasted seam and stitch. Why, if you'd have seen them with their missus, couldn't swear to which was which. and men's all dressed up in Prince Albert's. Hush your mouth and get away. Well, I ain't seen such fancy dresses since last quarterly meeting day. Who was there? Now, who you asking? How you spec I going to know? Might think I stood there counting everybody at the door. And I'll leave you with that.
Thank you.
And it goes on to tell her who was at the party and what happened. It's a wonderful poem.
I like the part with the minister, you know. He particularly got my intention because he was kind of funny, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, yeah. Oh, I forgot how that goes right now. I forgot.
Okay.
It's in context. Yeah, sequence, right, yeah. Right. In sequence. But I love doing that poem.
Thank you. Yeah. I love hearing it. I could hear it over and over and over again.
I know. Once I did it at a white church in Chatham, and it was an old man in the audience. He just kept saying, "Well, do it again." He just loved it.
Yeah.
Said, "No, I can't do it again."
Well, there's parts of when you speak that you don't. I bleed through the two worlds. Like I'm at the party and I'm you know, and I'm like, this, it's timeless, you know, and there's beautiful parts when you're speaking that you are the poem, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, anyway, thanks for doing that.
You're welcome.
So I'm going to, you last mentioned your father before we were talking, before we went to the party, the poem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to kind of move to your influence by your father, and because he sounded like he was pretty special in your life.
Well, he was. Dad was a very, very, he came to Dover when he was, I think he was 18. He left home. Well, he only had like a sixth grade education, and my mother really taught him how to write his name and how to read. He didn't know. He came from a really country school back in a place called Shelltown, Maryland, which is way back in the woods. And when he came, he opened his own garage. Yeah, he had a gift of fixing cars. He was just like a doctor. He could just, you drive the car up in the yard and, you know, "Bill, something's wrong with this car." And he said, "Well, turn it on. Let me listen." Okay, I know what it is.
Just through the listening.
Yeah, just through the listening, he could tell what it was. Mm-hmm. And so everybody in the community knew Bill Holden. And he had quite a life. He didn't really want to work for, he wanted to be his own boss and own man, and which was very hard in those days to make a living doing your own thing, you know. But he managed to do so many things. And talking to my brother last night, trying to refresh my memory a little bit, he just told me stories. In fact, he's the one, my brother should be interviewed. He just has story upon story about my dad. He spent more time with him than I did, being the only boy. I have two sisters and one brother, and I'm the oldest of the four.
And you were the troublemaker.
Yeah, I was. I admit to that. I know if I said anything different, and this, and my family's going to hear this,
you'd be nabbed.
Yeah, I gave my mother kind of a fit. I guess I was before my time too, because I was coming on into the 50s, you know. Then and I got a lot of stuff from the movies. I loved the movies. I would spend so much. Every Saturday in the movies. And I especially love Ginger Rogers and The Dance and Fred Astaire and Sonya Henie on the ice skates and Loretta Young. And I could just go on and on about the people that I loved in the movies.
And Clark Gable, who you had a... You had somebody related to him maybe in your family?
Well, my dad was William Holden. And, of course, there's Wilm Holden, the movie star.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't call my, well, I called my dad Dark Gable.
He was the real movie star.
He was
in your life.
He was a real movie star.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I've lost my train. Where am I? All well, over the place.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to, you know, cover a lifetime.
I know.
You've lived so many worlds, and you know, been so many places.
I know. You were asking me about my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I went on to tell you about how he had his own mechanics. And then he had his own trucking business. And he would haul produce from the southern markets like Virginia. And he went down as far as Georgia. And sometimes he went to Florida to get produce and bring it up on these god-awful trucks. I mean, nothing like the trucks they have today. Hard, bouncing, yeah. And it was just, but he loved it. He loved being on the road. And he would bring up the produce to New York and New Jersey. And that was summer produce. And then during the fall, he would go up to upstate New York and bring apples and down to New York City and New Jersey. And then during the winter, he would haul coal, anthracite, hard coal, because a lot of the buildings and very, I'd say, influential people that had big homes had furnaces and they burned coal. Everybody else burned wood or kerosene. So when we moved to our new house out in Forest Street, the one we love, so it had a furnace with coal stove, with a coal furnace. So we were like the people on. Oh, hey, yeah, we had moved up like the Jeffersons moving on up. And so he would, and he had a contract with the town, and he would furnish coal for the state buildings because Dover is the capital. Mm-hmm. So we had what we call Capitol Green, where all the state buildings were. So he furnished anthracite hard coal for them. And then he would haul glass. During the war, he had bins where people would collect glass because we used a lot of glass bottles, mm-hmm. and tin cans. We would save our tin cans during the war. And he would give people money for their bushel of glass, and he would smash it up and put it on his truck and take it up to New Jersey to the Anchor Hocking plant where they made glass jars and Anchor Hocking. You know, mm-hmm. Anchor Hocking is... Yeah, so wherever there's a way to make money, my dad knew how. He had a chicken farm.
Who knew?
20,000 chickens. And my brother tells me last night on the phone that he had the only two-story chicken house in all of Kent County.
William Holden.
Two-story chicken house.
I don't know how one man could do that much.
I tell you, he was a marvel. And, of course, I was the troublemaker in my house. I mean, the oldest, so my mother said. So she used to put me on the truck with Dad. It was like, take her, please.
Get her out of my hair.
Yes.
Yes.
Take Dolores. She's the troublemaker in the house. With you gone, Bill, you know, it's so hard with having kids. So if you just could take her off my hands for a few days, I'd be happy. And that worked pretty well. You know, I'd eat watermelons and tomatoes and cantaloupe until I got sick and sleep under the truck, at night with my dad and all his buddies. They took good care of me and saw that I did the right thing and eat right. But it all came to an end once when, on one of these trips, I came back with my hair all pressed and curled and a brand new dress and brand new patent leather shoes. And so when I walked in the door, my mother says, well, who is this? And where'd you get all this? And I said, well, Miss Cece, or Miss whatever her name was.
Hattie.
Miss Hattie. Miss Hattie, you know, took me to her house and gave me a nice hot bath, Mom. And she washed my hair and curled it for me and bought me these new shoes and dress. Oh, well, okay. Well, do you know that night in the front bedroom was a whole lot of bumping and knocking?
Not the kind you're thinking of.
No. Door slamming, voices raised. And that was the end of my trips on the truck with my dad.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, we don't want to rest on that story now, do we?
We know the rest of that story.
Yeah.
But
my he was real special to you.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He was, and to the whole community, he was real special. And I don't know how he did this, but he managed to build a development. Yeah, right across the right on this. Well, the house that we bought when we first moved to Forest Street, right across the street from that was this field, big field, owned by this. Can't think of his name. Just went out of my head. And my dad used to say to my mother, be rocking on the front porch and be looking at the lots over there. He says, God, he said, I'd like to put some homes over there so black folks could have some homes of their own. And my mother says, you know, old man Mifflin, that was his name, Mifflin. Old man Mifflin's not going to sell you that land. He said, well, you know, he got that land and he built those houses. And it was amazing because I didn't know the man could even build. But with the Dunkards, well, we call them Dunkards, but they are Mennonites. He got and they do building. They do beautiful building woodwork. So he got hired a crew of them and started building houses. But the town gave him a fit, Jane.
Yeah, there goes the neighborhood.
No, it was all black out there.
Oh, I thought Forest Street was on the...
where he was across the street was a lot. And black people were slowly moving out because once we moved there, you know, we contaminated the area.
Yeah, right.
So the whites started moving out. So the town gave him a fit. They didn't want him to have the water. They gave him a time about the electric going out there, poles. I mean, but he never gave up. The man just would not give up. And they put him through fire. But
He built it. Mm-hmm.
And about 4 or 5 years ago, well, this was after he died. Yeah. So, yeah, he's been dead since 1999. And we have a plaque, the town. And my nephew got together and put a plaque out there, William Holden.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
so
wonderful.
And the mayor came down and the people from the, you know, state house came and honored my dad. So it was quite a send off and a recognition of all the things that he'd done.
Mm-hmm. It is kind of nice when someone saw it. You
yes.
know what I mean, he really had an impact too.
Yes, he did.
Well, then I'm, you know, in interest of time, I want to bring you into, like, you married a guy just as fabulous as your father.
Yeah.
Your husband,
about that?
Who is the greatest guy.
Yeah, he is. And I fought that all the way, too.
Well, that, you know, you have to.
Well, because my mother liked him. And anything she liked, I didn't like, you know.
Right. But Joe.
Yeah. He persisted. And he saw me when I was in the 9th grade. I mean, I was like 15 years old.
And the only redheaded girl in the class, eh?
Yeah, only redheaded girl around. And he came from the college. He was his first year at college. So he used to come and get the professor's kids that went to my school. And he saw me. I don't remember ever seeing him. But he told my neighbor down the street who went to college. And she told me that Joe Deleuze had eyes for me. I says, well, who is he? So she says, well, the football boys come in early. And Carrie Mae Drummond is having a little party and he'll be there. So do you want to go? I said, I don't know if my mama. She says, well, and her name was Helen Goins. So, and mom liked Helen. Helen was nice. So, yeah, you can go with Helen to the party. So Joe was there and I got to see him and I didn't like him.
Well, we're going to fast forward to you marry him and have how many children?
We have 6.
And you moved to Cape Cod from Delaware.
Yeah.
He was from up this neck of the woods.
Yes, he was.
He's Cape Verdean.
Yeah.
And his people were in New Bedford and Cape Cod.
Mm-hmm.
So then the two of you become pretty much the, like, king and queen of the NAACP on Cape Cod, from what I understand.
Well, yeah. He was president for 20 years.
Yeah. And continues to kind of hold the place of leadership in that way. Both of you do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was also the building inspector for the town, the first black building inspector ever.
In the town of Barnstable.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And he held that job for about 20 years, too. In fact, he was president of the NAACP and building inspector at the same time. So,
and you were busy out knocking on doors to do the fair housing.
Fair housing. We were getting fair housing. Well, when we first moved here, it was pretty segregated. Cape Cod was pretty segregated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and what would you think about, how would you describe it now?
It still has its pockets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Well, I wish I could talk to you for about 3 days right now on all of this, but one of the things I wanted to, we just kind of joked about earlier, is have you experienced any miracles in your life? I thought it was such a beautiful question, and your response was even as beautiful, which was every day. It's all,
yeah.
It's all a miracle.
It's all a miracle. Absolutely. It is all a miracle that I'm even here talking to you. Who knew? Mm-hmm. From Queen Street to Cape Cod. I mean, it's a long journey. Yeah. A lot of road and stuff in between.
Yeah. And the thing that I'm so struck by is that you've changed. You've gone through immense changes from 1930s to 2007, and from a segregated world where you wouldn't have been having a conversation with a white woman, and that you've gone through these changes with, I can't find a trace of any kind of edge or bitterness or holdout anywhere on the all that's left is love after this life, you know, or in this part of your life. And to me, that's the miracle.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
Well, I had my trying times. Yeah. It was a time when I didn't like white folks at all. Didn't want to be in their company. You know, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I found so many nice ones that I couldn't be mean anymore.
Same here.
And it's just changed my life. And besides, it takes too much energy to hate.
Mm.
And to be you know, it just messes up your whole spirit and your whole soul to be always angry. And that's not how I want to live my life. I want to be free to be me. And if you like it, that's fine. If you don't, I've always had that very much independent, like my dad.
Yeah.
I don't like to have people telling me what to do, even to the day. I don't take orders very well.
You might not take orders, but you're certainly willing to take a risk.
Yes, yeah. I am very risky, like he was. Mm-hmm. He would step out on faith that it would happen for him. And if it didn't, well, we're going to the next thing.
Well, then, as we, is there anything like that's, you would want to go away with or not having said, or is something that you need to say before we end this?
Yeah, I would like to say a little bit about my wonderful husband. You did mention him once, yeah. Joe is, he's a blessing to me. He is the kindest. He lets me be me, warts and all, and he loves me for that. I don't ever remember him being angry with me about what I'm doing or what I said. He just, that's my Dolores, he'd say.
Yeah.
And he's, I don't know, he is just my hero.
Mm.
Yeah, he's my hero. After my dad was my husband. And he's a wonderful guy, and I give all that I am to him, really.
And I can see that in both of you, and it's a gift to the world just to see the two of you together.
Yeah. 55 years in July we've been married.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is.
It's a beautiful thing. Well, Dolores, I love you, dear.
Yes.
So much. Mm-hmm. And thank you for sharing your life and your stories with me. And sharing your joy with me, sharing your truth, your expression, your rowdiness, your wildness, and all that you are. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jane. It's been a pleasure. And wild women don't get the blues.
Amen.